You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that will help enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It's Ryan. It is awesome to be with you again today. Hope you're doing good. And yeah, hope things are going well for you. I know every week we have more guests coming on, sharing their stories, sharing insights. Hopefully you're getting skills, knowledge, training, resources, whatever you're looking for. I hope you find it here. If there's something that you're missing, maybe you want more focus on how to use ServiceTitan or how to use any FSM at all. Maybe you're doing Sara or whatever. Maybe you have questions about cash flow, financials, management, leadership, hiring, firing, HR practice, whatever it is. We try to have a really broad pool of people coming on to lend their expertise. If there's something you are looking for, shoot us an email, info@bluecollar.ceo. Tell us what would be helpful to you. We'll absolutely find the best of the best and bring them on to see if we can add value to your business. Today, I'm going to introduce you to the principal for Douglas Orr Plumbing. If you're not familiar with Douglas Orr Plumbing, they're one of the largest plumbing companies in Florida. They are also one of the very few companies in the region who do new construction and service. They are turning 50 years old. And what we're going to be talking about, it's so many things all over the map, but we're going to be talking about how they leverage diversification to weather all kinds of economic, political, social change landscapes over the past 50 years. And there's going to be a lot in here that you can learn from, apply to your business so that the next economic storm, the next political storm, the next cultural revolution, whatever those things are for you, you're going to have a better way to have your business not just survive, but thrive. Let's introduce you to Kevin. Kevin, I am really glad that you're on the show today. Can't wait to have a conversation because there's a lot of interesting things I just can't wait to ask you about. But for those who maybe don't yet know who you are, let's maybe just start there, man. Who are you and what do you do?
Well, my name is Kevin Borowski, and I work for Douglas Orr Plumbing in Miami, Florida. We service South Florida, mostly Miami-Dade and Fort Lauderdale. Dabble in the West Palm Beach market as well. But basically, Douglas Orr Plumbing is a family business. Doug Orr is my stepfather. Who started the company back in 1974, just working out of his house. And he, way he got started was basically connecting septic to sewers. Here in Miami Springs is where our office is located, which is just north of the Miami airport in the middle of Miami. And it's kind of like a small town USA. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's we used to call it Mayberry, but really close knit town. And literally, it's a great location because you can get on all the expressways, and I mean, it's literally right in the middle of Miami.
It's funny because I don't live in Florida, but when I think about the Miami area, I don't think of Mayberry.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's cool people. It's cool you have like this little pocket that has existed over the years.
Yeah. So next year will actually be our 50th year anniversary.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So, that's a huge milestone, man. Congrats.
Yeah. So we're second generation, which actually we've moved on from that. So Doug started in 74 just as a small service company working out of his garage. And then he just kept getting a little bigger and bigger and dabbled in a little bit of the commercial work. And then great thing, because he kept service and he started commercial plumbing as well. He did that. And I would say in the late 90s, we've all worked here. Me and my brother-in-law and my stepbrother, who eventually... Oh,
it's a whole family operation.
Yeah. And so we ended up buying Doug out. Wayne Orr, my stepbrother, he's an actual plumber, so he naturally went into the business, and he started buying Doug out like in the mid 90s, and then he brought in Chris Behrens, my brother-in-law, and me into the business as well. And again, we've worked here since, you know, I started working in the yard and did deliveries, and you know, throughout college, every break I'd come here and work. But yeah, just a really unique family business. We started buying him out, and he retired. Doug did back in like, say, 2002, 2003. And then we just continued the business, and we just kept growing. And then actually in 4 years ago, 2018, we all were kind of at, you know, different times in our life. And we were trying to not necessarily figure out exit strategies, but, you know, what's the next step? The best thing for us, best thing for the company. And we actually turned the company into an ESOP. So employee-owned company. Yeah. So it's,
I've heard of a few other companies doing that. How was that transition for you?
It's been good. So, brother-in-law Chris, and he was more on the accounting computer side of the business. He ended up retiring, and, Wayne and I stayed on. And, then we brought in, his name is Marcus Spiegelberg, but he became the president of the company. You know, advanced a couple, promoted a couple guys that have been with the company for 25, 30 years. Great plumbers, great business guys, Rick Mascaro and Jason Putnam. They became vice presidents as well. So, you know, 2019 turned into an ESOP, and there's just a lot of, it's a lot that goes into an ESOP. They explain it to you, and it's still hard to, you know, visualize how everything works.
Yeah. I remember sitting in, someone is presenting this to a group of guys that I was with and walking through it. And I wonder, like, oh, this is okay. Wait, what? Like, the more you got into the minutia of it, the more my brain hurt.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a sharp guy, you know, like I feel like I can track things. And I was like, I don't understand.
Right.
And then there's other variations. This is totally chasing rabbits, but if I remember, is that called ghost stock, where it's like it's not exactly going full on like legal control to the employees, like they don't have like stock sharing like as a concept.
Yeah,
but it's like it's like ghost stock. The idea is like you get paid the equivalent of that particular share. But if I'm understanding right, there's no actual equity associated with it. Right, it's almost like a profit sharing more than anything.
It's like there's different types of it, and by no means am I any expert on
same.
It.
Same, yeah.
But that you know throughout time they gain shares in the company. It costs them nothing, but the good thing about it, and it takes a little while. I mean, we're in our fourth year, and you can finally start to see the buy-in with your employees, because at first you try to explain it to them, and a lot of them are like, what's really going on here. But then, you know, you start to get statements and stuff like that and say, oh, man, I just was awarded these shares for the company. And it has a monetary value to it. And then next year, my shares went up and the value went up. So it's slowly we're really waiting for it to catch on. And but it is. And, it's been good. You know, a lot of learning curves like anything else. But
it's also, I know a lot of companies do it to reduce employee turnover, right? Because it maximizes retention, especially if there's like investment period. Like our director of ops, we hired him from Tesla. Mm-hmm. Tesla's like, is it a 4 or 5 year investment period? Like they just kind of throw these kind of options at you hard. And you see, like you're saying, you see the balance going up like sweet. But if you leave before a 5 year window or whatever, that.
Yeah, there's a vesting period, of course. Yeah.
They go bye-bye.
Yeah.
And so it's a way for companies like that to keep their talent in-house, like have them work, have them being driven for the goal because they see the reward for themselves. But also, hey, you're not going to go get the next sweetest offer that comes knocking on your door.
Right.
It's totally a tactic.
Yeah. And, you know, we have to stay heavily involved was, you know, what we wanted. And we didn't want to just sell our company. And because it's been our family business. So we really want it to do good by us. We wanted to do good by our employees and just our reputation and our name. And it was the only thing that felt right.
Yeah. So I'm curious because especially the age of the company, obviously the business has weathered a lot of storms. It's gone through It's seen political changes. It's seen economic changes. It's seen cultural changes where you are like located within the state. There's just a lot of things that is weathered. And so you've actually had to make intentional choices to diversify the business, to essentially be more nimble, more resistant and resilient through uncertainty and changes. I'm curious to know more about like the whole, when you started doing the new construction and the service side together, when you're running both of those, tell me about why you made that choice. Cause a lot of companies focus on one, very few are able to successfully do both. Tell me, like, why did you go, this is an option we need to consider, and what that looked like for you?
So, you know, Doug Orr was a visionary and very smart businessman. And I mean, he knew right from the beginning, like, hey, we can go after this big work, this commercial work, but service work, there's always going to be service work. So he always, you know, kept that service department going. And then, you know, as time goes on and you develop a good reputation, you know, it's you know, word of mouth basically. And, you know, it's helped us so many different times because, you know, construction, it's always going to go up and down. That's never going to change. And like you mentioned, we're in South Florida, which is a great place to be, a hotbed. I mean, you have foreign investors, you know, it's great weather. So there's always building going on, and it's always busy, and it's just a big city. But yeah, like in, you know, I guess it was like 2007 on that, you know, economic downturn, it got scary for us, but man, we really relied on the service and this, you know, part of our business. We did whatever we could at growing that. Mm-hmm. And we were always successful doing it. I mean, our service business every year, you know, has gone up, and, you know, it's nice to know it, and it's a lot of work. I mean, you know, we go from anywhere doing 50 service to 60 service calls a day, which that's a lot, you know, just all the billing, just the dispatching, everything. But having that there is just, it's been a kind of a secret to our success, you know. And like you mentioned, there's not many plumbing companies that have both of them.
It seems like, I feel like there's a lot of guys I talk to who are plumbers, and they'll think about the idea, maybe new construction, maybe commercial, maybe government contracting, whatever sort of segment, right? In addition to service, and they think it can't be that hard to do both, right? They just think, I have the same guys, do the same work, I have the same trucks, I have the same vans, I have the same everything. They just think about it doing more of the same. When you hear people think out loud like that, just like, it's just doing what you already do, is just doing it for this guy instead of Mrs. Smith or whatever. How do you agree with that? Like what sort of like mindset shifting do you need to go through to understand that they might be more different than people would realize?
Yes. And you know, they're different. You know, you have your construction plumbers who, you know, they're used to going to the job sites every single day, and that's what they want to do. And then, you know, a service guy is a lot different. I mean, you're in front of customers, you know, you're having to do paperwork. Now it's, you know, on iPhones or iPads, you know, and that there is a hard thing for the guys to get used to as well. So it's kind of hard to just think that you're going to, hey, we have a plumbing company, we can do service and we can do new construction, because you know, when you have service too, you have to have guys on call. A lot of time guys don't want to be on call. Like we always have two guys on call, you know, and it's a sacrifice for them, but you know, obviously they get paid well to do it. But, there's some construction guys that they want to 9 to 5 it or 7 to 3 and that's it and be done.
Right.
So it's a commitment.
Do you feel like operationally they are more alike or more dissimilar?
Operationally, a little bit of both. But you know, we have a lot of overhead in our business, and we always have, but you actually need that. You know, people come in our office like, oh my God, I can't believe how many people you have working in your office.
Yeah.
You know, but in order to succeed, you have to have that. You have to have that support. I mean, just in our right now in our service division, I mean, we have five people who we call it the war room sometimes. Five or six people sit in the same room and they're dispatching calls, they're taking calls, and not to mention there, you know, we have service estimators. I mean, it's just, and that's not even touching on the new construction side, so, but yeah. there's overlap there. I mean, you can use people for, you know, a lot of your clerical work, they can, you know, or purchasing, they can do both service and construction.
So you're saying like the back office, it's okay if they double dip.
Yeah.
But maybe the guy's actually doing the work, turning the wrenches, like maybe that becomes harder for them to play both sides of the ball.
So, sometimes, yes, yeah, right? Yeah. But, you know, when times get slow, you got good guys in doing your commercial, you know, construction work that you're not going to let go. So
what sort of
turn them into service guys?
Yeah.
Or
well, yeah, totally. You guys, yeah. You don't, especially if they're worth keeping, like you don't want to be like sorry. What about like cash flow, like how does having two different divisions with two very different customer bases, how have you noticed the impact on the cash flow for the business as a whole with that?
Well, usually you know, service, you're getting paid quicker, you know, sometimes, because sometimes you might have contracts with certain companies and the terms might be 30 or 45 days, which is tough. Where new construction, you're always on those billing cycles. So having service is good because it's everyday income you're getting and you're not having to wait for, you know, construction drills.
Yeah. Or like if you're not doing construction, maybe they're doing commercial. Some of those commercial contracts can be like net 90, net 180. Like it can be stupid sometimes.
Yeah. So, you know, we kind of touch base on diversity. You know, and our service side, we do residential and we do commercial, you know, just on the service side, and, you know, and that goes back and forth. And you wonder, hey, should we be doing residential or, you know, should we just do commercial? It's a little easier sometimes because residential customers, they're sometimes the easiest to please or they're the hardest to please. You know, and you have to deal with a lot of reviews from homeowners and stuff like, I mean, you know how it is.
Oh yeah.
But you know, we're diversified there. And then also we have a backflow division, which we're really starting to ramp up on that as well.
You have an entire division dedicated just to backflow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We do, it runs through our service division, but okay. We're doing so many of them that we know that there's a market for it that we
cool.
Yeah. We're starting to, you know, maybe just carve out a certain division for that. Yeah.
That's crazy. What sort of unexpected challenges or complications has had this sort of diversification brought to the table? Like something you thought this probably is not a big deal, but as it starts going and getting a life of its own, you start going, oh, we got to figure this out.
Nothing comes to mind. Okay. as far as that goes. I mean, it's just what we've always done. So we just handle it and, you know, put our energy where it needs to be put.
Why do you think not many companies, because like before I hit record, you made a comment, like there's not many companies in your little market that has like these dual divisions between, especially new construction and service. Why do you think so few companies are interested or able to do that well?
You know, I think you touched on it before, is they think it's easy to do, like, oh, well, it's plumbing, you know, and you start to do service. Well, you have to market for service. You have to, like I mentioned, you have to be on call for service, and you're just dealing with a whole different type of clientele, and, you know, problems arise from that. So it's just something you really need to have a good plan. And if you're going to do it, you have to say, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to grow this business. And this is what we need to do it.
Yeah. If somebody's listening to you right now, maybe they've been kicking around the idea of diversifying. And maybe like right now we're all doing, like, it's pretty adjacent for the core service you do, which is like plumbing, right? It's managing the fluids. But maybe for some people, it's like bringing on HVAC or electrical or some like other tangential things. Septic is another common one. What if someone's thinking about this, but maybe they just get overwhelmed by trying to parse it through? Not just like diversifying the customer mix, but diversifying the service offerings, right? Both of those.
Right. Right.
What sort of advice would you give to somebody as they're trying to think through how to put that puzzle together?
Yeah. And that's something that we've talked about so many different times is getting into the mechanical market, HVAC, mm-hmm. Because there, you know, something that we've always wanted to do and is offer our customers service contracts, right? And we've talked about it so many different times. And I know there's plumbing companies out there that do it. We have just never really found the value in it because a lot of time, I mean, you can do it for restaurants, you know, certain types of businesses that need to maybe have all their pipes jetted out every 3 months or every 6 months or whatever. That's something we've kind of struggled with. And we were talking about earlier today is like, man, we would love to sell contracts to either homeowners or businesses, but we also want to make sure it's of value to them and not just something that we're selling just to sell.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's something that's, you know, we've always been intrigued by the HVAC market because you see it all the time. They have service contracts. They'll come and change your filters, you know, once a month or, you know, once every month. So I would say, just going back to your question, is if we've talked about it, and if we were going to move into the HVAC market, we couldn't just shoot from the hip. We would really need a good, and we have the infrastructure here. I mean, we have 25 to 30 service trucks out on the road every single day. But then you have to have those plumbers, guys who've just been plumbing their whole lives, start to learn HVAC as well.
Yeah, you all of a sudden start having to think like, how do you stock the trucks different? How do you do the cross tanning where it's possible? And you, I mean, a lot of guys, I think, love the idea of bringing on HVAC for their plumbing or vice versa. But there might be markets where HVAC might just be really, really solid for like demand, maybe 3, 4, 5 months.
Right.
Like where you are in Miami, it's like, it's AC season almost all the time.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right. So it's like, that's like every HVAC guy's like dream to be like, oh, customers in March. Amazing.
Yeah.
Just because of the way the market seasonality works and impacts demand. If somebody, it's so cool to see the way you guys are kind of stacking this and trying to solve this and how you've been able to successfully for 50 years, which is nuts. Like start building a really stable, diversified business that has weathered so much. If somebody is curious to learn more about your story, like go visit, I don't know if you do shop tours, anything like that. Is there a way that people can reach out to you or someone to like learn more, ask questions, schedule a visit, anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, we're always welcome to do that. I mean, you know, obviously we have a website, you guys can look us up on that. That's something that we want to do as well. And it doesn't matter if it's a small shop, a shop our size or bigger. There's so much you can learn from other companies. And in fact, when we hire people, that's the first thing we tell them, say, listen, if you see something in here that doesn't make sense or that you have an idea we could do better, bring it to the table. Cause maybe we've just been doing it this way. Cause we've just always done it this way.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I'll make sure that your information is in the show notes for anyone to check out your website, hit you guys up. Kevin, I know you're crazy busy, super impressed with what you're building there, and I cannot wait to see the work you guys continue to do and where this thing goes. Thanks for stopping by, man. It was awesome having you on.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors, and founder of Levergy, the digital marketing solution for serious home service companies. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another awesome episode. See you soon.